Preparations for the inauguration of the Cenobiarch Prophet began many hours before the dawn. Firstly, and not according to ancient tradition, there was a very careful search of the temple by Deacon Cusp and some of his colleagues. There was a prowling for tripwires and a poking of odd corners for hidden archers. Although it was against the threat, Deacon Cusp had his head screwed on. He also sent a few squads into the town to round up the usual suspects. The Quisition always found it advisable to leave a few suspects at large. Then you knew where to find them when you needed them. After that, a dozen lesser priests arrived to shrive the premises and drive out all Afreets, jinns, and devils. Deacon Cusp watched them without comment. He'd never had any personal dealings with supernatural entities, but he knew what a well-placed arrow would do to an unexpecting stomach. Someone tapped him on the ribcage. He gasped at the sudden linkage of real life into the chain of thought and reached instinctively for his dagger.
"Oh,"
he said. Lutse nodded and smiled and indicated with his broom that Deacon Cusp was standing on a patch of floor that he, Lutse, wished to sweep.
"Hello, you ghastly little yellow fool,"
said Deacon Cusp. Nod, smile.
"Never say a bloody word, don't you?"
said Deacon Cusp. Smile, smile.
"Idiot."
Smile, smile, watch. Ern stood back.
"Now," he said, "you sure you've got it all?"
"Easy," said Simony, who was sitting in the turtle's saddle.
"Tell me again," said Ern.
"We stalk up the firebox," said Simony. "Then when the red needle points to XXV1, turn the brass tap. When the bronze whistle blows, pull the big lever and steer by pulling the ropes."
"Right," said Ern, but he still looked doubtful.
"It's a precision device," he said. "And I am a professional soldier," said Simony. "I'm not a superstitious peasant."
"Fine, fine. Well, if you're sure..."
They'd had time to put a few finishing touches to the moving turtle. There were serrated edges to the shell and spikes on the wheels, and of course the waste steam pipe. He was a little uncertain about the waste steam pipe.
"It's merely a device," said Simony. "It does not present a problem."
"Give us an hour, then. You should just get to the temple by the time we get the doors open."
"Right. Understood. Off you go. Sergeant Fergman knows the way."
Ern looked at the steam pipe and bit his lip. "I don't know what effect it's going to have on the enemy," he thought, "but it scares the hells out of me." Brother woke up, or at least ceased trying to sleep. Lutse had gone, probably sweeping somewhere. He wandered through the deserted corridors of the novice section. It would be hours before the new Cenobiarch was crowned. There were dozens of ceremonies to be undertaken first. Everyone who was anyone would be in the place and the surrounding piazzas, and so would the even greater number of people who were no one very much. The sestinas were empty, the endless prayers left unsung. The citadel might have been dead were it not for the huge, indefinable background roar of tens of thousands of people being silent. Sunlight filtered down through the light wells. Brother had never felt more alone. The wilderness had been a feast of fun compared to this. Last night with Lutse, it had all seemed so clear. Last night he'd been in a mood to confront Vorbis there and then. Last night there seemed to be a chance. Anything was possible last night. That was the trouble with last nights. They were always followed by this morning's. He wandered out into the kitchen level and then into the outside world. There were one or two cooks around preparing the ceremonial meal of meat, bread and salt, but they paid him no attention at all. He sat down outside one of the slaughterhouses. There was, he knew, a back gate somewhere around. Probably no one would stop him today if he walked out. Today they would be looking for unwanted people walking in. He could just walk away. The wilderness had seemed quite pleasant, apart from the thirst and hunger. St. Ungulant, with his madness and his mushrooms, seemed to have life exactly right. It didn't matter if you fooled yourself, provided you didn't let yourself know it, and did it well. Life was so much simpler in the desert. But there were a dozen guards by the gate. They had an unsympathetic look. He went back to his seat, which was tucked away in a corner, and stared gloomily at the ground. If Om was alive, surely he could send a sign. A grating by Brother's sandal lifted itself up a few inches and slid aside. He stared at the hole. A hooded head appeared, stared back and disappeared again. There was a subterranean whispering. The head reappeared and was followed by a body. It pulled itself onto the cobbles. The hood was pushed back. The man grinned conspiratorially at Brother, put his finger to his lips, and then, without warning, launched himself at him with violent intent. Brother rolled across the cobbles and raised his hands frantically as he saw the gleam of metal. One filthy hand clamped itself against his mouth. A knife blade made a dramatic and very final silhouette against the light.
No! Why not? We said the first thing we'll do, we'll kill all the priests.
Not that one!
Brother dared to swivel his eyes sideways. Although the second figure rising from the hole was also wearing a filthy robe, there was no mistaking the paintbrush hairstyle. He tried to say, Ern?
Shut up, you!
Said the other man, pressing the knife to his throat.
Brother, said Ern, you're alive?
Brother moved his eyes from his captor to Ern in a way which he hoped would indicate that it was too soon to make any commitment on this point.
He's all right, said Ern.
All right? He's a priest.
But he's on our side, aren't you, brother?
Brother tried to nod and thought, I'm on everyone's side. It'd be nice if just for once someone was on mine. The hand was unclamped from his mouth, but the knife remained resting on his throat. Brother's normally careful thought processes ran like quicksilver.
The turtle moves, he ventured.
The knife was withdrawn with obvious reluctance.
I don't trust him, said the man. We should shove him down the hole at least. Brother's one of us, said Ern.
That's right, said Brother. Which ones are you?
Ern leaned closer.
How's your memory?
Unfortunately, it's fine.
Good, good. It would be a good idea to stay out of trouble, do you hear, if anything happens. Remember the turtle?
Well, of course you would.
What things?
Ern patted him on the shoulder, making Brother think for a moment of Vorbis. Vorbis, who never touched another person inside his head, was a great toucher with his hands.
Best if you don't know what's happening, said Ern.
But I don't know what's happening, said Brother.
Good, that's the way.
The burly man gestured with his knife towards the tunnels that led into the rock.
Are we going or what?
He demanded. Ern ran after him and then stopped briefly and turned.
Be careful, he said. We need what's in your head.
Brother watched them go.
So do I,
he murmured. And then he was alone again.
But then he thought, hold on, I don't have to be. I'm a bishop. At least I can watch. Om's gone and soon the world will end, so at least I might as well watch it happen.
Sandals flapping, Brother set off towards the place. Bishops move diagonally. That's why they often turn up where the kings don't expect them to be.
You god-awful idiot! Don't go that way!
The sun was well up now. In fact, it was probably setting, if Didactylos's theories about the speed of light were correct. But in matters of relativity, the point of view of the observer is very important, and from Om's point of view, the sun was a golden ball in a flaming orange sky. He pulled himself up another slope and stared blearily at the distant citadel. In his mind's eye, he could hear the mocking voices of small gods. They didn't like a god who had failed. They didn't like that at all. It let them all down. It reminded them of mortality. He'd be thrust out into the deep desert where no one would ever come, ever, until the end of the world. He shivered in his shell. Ern and Fergman walked nonchalantly through the tunnels of the citadel, using the kind of nonchalant walk which, had there been anyone to take an interest in it, would have drawn detailed and arrow-sharp attention to them within seconds. But the only people around were those with vital jobs to do. Besides, it was not a good idea to stare too hard at the guards in case they stared back. Simony had told Ern he'd agreed to this. He couldn't quite remember doing so. The sergeant knew a way into the citadel that was sensible, and Ern knew about hydraulics. Fine. Now he was walking through these dry tunnels with his tool belt clinking. There was a logical connection, but it had been made by somebody else. Fergman turned a corner and stopped by a large grill, which stretched from floor to ceiling. It was very rusty. It might once have been a door. There was a suggestion of hinges rusted into the stone. Ern peered through the bars. Beyond, in the gloom, there were pipes.
Eureka, he said.
Going to have a bath, then, said Fergman.
Just keep watch.
Ern selected a short crowbar from his belt and inserted it between the grill and the stonework. Give me a foot of good steel and a wall to brace. My foot against. The grill ground forward and then popped out with a leaden sound.
And I can change the world.
He stepped inside the long, dark, damp room and gave a whistle of admiration. No one had done any maintenance for, well, for as long as it took iron hinges to become a mass of crumbling rust. But all this still worked. He looked up at lead and iron buckets bigger than he was, and a tangle of man-sized pipes. This was the breath of God. Probably the last man who knew how it worked had been tortured to death years before, or as soon as it was installed. Killing the creator was a traditional method of patent protection. There were the levers, and there, hanging over pits in the rock floor, were the two sets of counterweights. Probably it had only take a few hundred gallons of water to swing the balance either way. Of course, the water'd have to be pumped up.
Sergeant?
Fergman peered round the door. He looked nervous, like an atheist in a thunderstorm.
What?
Erne pointed.
There's a big shaft through the wall there, see? At the bottom of the gear chain.
The what?
The big knobbly wheels.
Oh, yeah.
Where does the shaft go to?
Don't know. There's a big treadmill of correction through there.
Ah, the breath of God was ultimately the sweat of men. Didactylos would have appreciated the joke, Erne thought. He was aware of a sound that had been there all the time, but was only now penetrating through his concentration. It was tinny and faint and full of echoes, but it was voices from the pipes. The sergeant, to judge by his expression, had heard them too. Erne put his ear to the metal. There was no possibility of making out words, but the general religious rhythm was familiar enough.
It's just the service going on in the temple, he said. It's probably resonating off the doors and the sounds being carried down the pipes.
Fergman did not look reassured.
No gods are involved in any way,
Erne translated. He turned his attention to the pipes again.
Simple principle, said Erne, more to himself than to Fergman. Water pours into the reservoirs on the weights, disturbing the equilibrium. One lot of weights descends and the other rises up the shaft in the wall. The weight of the door is immaterial. As the bottom weights descend, these buckets here tip over, pouring the water out. Probably quite a smooth action. Perfect equilibrium at either end of the movement, too. Nicely thought out.
He caught Fergman's expression.
Water goes in and out and the doors swing open, he translated. So all we've got to do is wait for... What did he say the sign would be?
They'll blow a trumpet when they're through the main gate, said Fergman, pleased to be of service. Right.
Erne eyed the weights and the reservoirs overhead. The bronze pipes dripped with corrosion.
But perhaps we'd better just check that we know what we're doing, he said. It probably takes a minute or two before the doors start moving.
He fumbled under his robe and produced something that looked, to Fergman's eye, very much like a torture instrument. This must have communicated itself to Erne, who said very slowly and kindly,
This is an adjustable spanner.
Yes?
It's for twisting nuts off.
Fergman nodded miserably.
Yes, he said.
And this is a bottle of penetrating oil.
Oh, good.
Just give me a leg up, will you? It'll take time to unhook the linkage to the valve, so we might as well make a start.
Erne heaved himself into the ancient machinery, while above the ceremony droned on. Cut me own hand off to Blar was all for new prophets. He was even in favour of the end of the world if he could get the concession to sell religious statues, cut-price icons, rancid sweetmeats, fermenting dates and putrescent olives on a stick to any watching crowds. Subsequently, this was his testament. There never was a book of prophet Brother, but an enterprising scribe, during what came to be called the Renovation, did assemble some notes, and Dublar had this to say.
1. I was standing right by the statue of Ossory, right, when I noticed Brother just beside me. Everyone was keeping away from him because of him being a bishop, and they do things to you if you jostle bishops. 2. I said to him, Hello, your graciousness, and offered him a yoghurt, practically free. 3. He responded, No. 4. I said, It's very healthy, it's a live yoghurt. 5. He said, Yes, he could see. 6. He was staring at the doors. This was about the time of the third gong, right? So we all knew we'd got hours to wait. He was looking a bit down, and it's not as if he even ate the yoghurt, which I admit was on the hum a bit, what with the heat. I mean, it was more alive than usual. I mean, I had to keep hitting it with a spoon to stop it getting out of the... All right. I was just explaining about the yoghurt. All right, I mean, you want to put a bit of colour in, don't you? People like a bit of colour. It was green. 7. He just stood there staring, so I said, "Got a problem, your reverence?" Upon which he vouchsafed, "I cannot hear him." I said, "What is this he to whom what you refer?" He said, "If he was here, he would send me a sign." 8. There is no truth whatsoever in the rumour that I ran away at this juncture. It was just the pressure of the crowd. I have never been a friend of the Inquisition. I might have sold them food, but I always charged them extra. 9. Anyway, right. Then he pushed through the line of guards what was holding the crowd back and stood right in front of the doors. And they weren't sure what to do about bishops. And I heard him say something like, "I carried you in the desert. I believed all my life. Just give me this one thing." 10. Something like that anyway. How about some yoghurt? Bargain offer. On a stick.
Om lifted himself over a creeper-clad wall by grasping tendrils in his beak and hauling himself up by the neck muscles. Then he fell down the other side. The citadel was as far away as ever. Brother's mind was flaming like a beacon in Om's senses. There's a streak of madness in everyone who spends quality time with gods, and it was driving the boy now.
"It's too soon," Om yelled. "You need followers. It can't be just you. You can't do it by yourself. You have to get disciples first."
Simony turned to look down the length of the turtle. 30 men were crouched under the shell, looking very apprehensive. A corporal saluted.
"The needle's there, Sergeant."
The brass whistle whistled. Simony picked up the steering ropes. This was what war should be, he thought. No uncertainty. A few more turtles like this and no one would ever fight again.
"Stand by," he said.
He pulled the big lever hard. The brittle metal snapped in his hand. Give anyone a lever long enough and they can change the world. It's unreliable levers that are the problem. In the depths of the temple's hidden plumbing, Urn grasped a bronze pipe firmly with his spanner and gave the nut a cautious turn. It resisted. He changed position and grunted as he used more pressure. With a sad little metal sound, the pipe twisted and broke. Water gushed out, hitting him in the face. He dropped the tool and tried to block the flow with his fingers, but it spurted around his hands and gurgled down the channel towards one of the weights.
"Stop it! Stop it!" he shouted.
"What?" said Fergman, several feet below him.
"Stop the water! How? The pipe's broken! I thought that's what you wanted to do!"
"Not yet!"
"Stop shouting, mister! There's guards around!"
Urn let the water gush for a moment as he struggled out of his robe, and then he rammed the sodden material into the pipe. It shot out again with some force and slapped wetly against the lead funnel, sliding down until it blocked the tube that led to the weights. The water piled up behind it and then spilled over onto the floor. Urn glanced at the weight. It hadn't begun to move. He relaxed slightly. Now, provided there was still enough water to make the weight drop...
"Both of you stand still."
He looked around, his mind going numb. There was a heavy-set man in a black robe standing in the stricken doorway. Behind him a guard held a sword in a meaningful manner.
"Who are you? Why are you here?"
Urn hesitated for only a moment. He gestured with his spanner.
"Well, it's the seating, isn't it?" he said. "You've got shocking seepage around the seating. Amazing it holds together."
The man stepped into the room. He glared uncertainly at Urn for a moment, and then turned his attention to the gushing pipe, and then back to Urn.
"But you're not..."
he began. He spun around as Fergman hit the guard hard with a length of broken pipe. When he turned back, Urn's spanner caught him full in the stomach. Urn wasn't strong, but it was a long spanner, and the well-known principles of leverage did the rest. He doubled up and then sagged backwards against one of the weights. What happened next happened in frozen time. Deacon Cusp grabbed at the weight for support. It sank down, ponderously, his extra poundage adding to the weight of the water. He clawed higher. It sank further, dropping below the lip of the pit. He sought for balance again, but this time it was against fresh air, and he tumbled on top of the falling weight. Erne saw his face staring up at him as the weight fell into the gloom. With a lever he could change the world. It had certainly changed it for Deacon Cusp. It had made it stop existing. Fergman was standing over the guard, his pipe raised.
"I know this one," he said. "I'm going to give him a right. Never mind about that. But..."
Above them, linkage clanked into action. There was a distant creaking of bronze against bronze.
"Let's get out of here," said Erne. "Only the gods know what's happening up there."
And blows rained on the unmoving, moving turtle's carapace.
"Damn! Damn! Damn!" shouted Simony, thumping it again. "Move! I command you to move! Can you understand, Planophobian? Move!"
The unmoving machine leaked steam and sat there. And Om pulled himself up the slope of a small hill. So it came to this, then. There was only one way to get to the citadel now. It was a million-to-one chance, with any luck. And Brother stood in front of the huge doors, oblivious to the crowd and the muttering guards. The Quisition could arrest anyone, but the guards weren't certain what happened to you if you apprehended an archbishop, especially one so recently favoured by the prophet.
Just a sign, Brother thought, in the loneliness of his head.
The doors trembled and swung slowly outwards. Brother stepped forward. He wasn't fully conscious now, not in any coherent way, as understood by normal people. Just one part of him was still capable of looking at the state of his own mind and thinking, perhaps the great prophets felt like this all the time. The thousands inside the temple were looking around in confusion. The choirs of lesser iams paused in their chant. Brother walked on up the aisle, the only one with a purpose in the suddenly bewildered throng. Vorbis was standing in the centre of the temple, under the vault of the dome. Guards hurried towards Brother, but Vorbis raised a hand in a gentle but very positive movement. Now Brother could take in the scene. There was the staff of Ossory, and Abyss's cloak, and the sandals of Sena, and, supporting the dome, the massive statues of the first four prophets. He'd never seen them. He'd heard about them every day of his childhood. And what did they mean now? They didn't mean anything. Nothing meant anything if Vorbis was prophet. Nothing meant anything if the Cenobiarch was a man who'd heard nothing in the inner spaces of his own head but his own thoughts. He was aware that Vorbis's gesture had not only halted the guards, although they surrounded him like a hedge, it had also filled the temple with silence, into which Vorbis spoke.
"Ah, my brother! We had looked for you in vain, and now, even, you are here."
Brother stopped a few feet away. The moment of whatever it had been that had propelled him through the doors had drained away. Now all there was Vorbis, smiling. The part of him still capable of thought was thinking, "There is nothing you can say. No one will listen. No one will care. It doesn't matter what you tell people about Ephib and Brother Murdoch and the desert. It won't be fundamentally true." Fundamentally true. That's what the world is, with Vorbis in it. Vorbis said,
"There is something wrong? Something you wish to say?"
The black-on-black eyes filled the world like two pits. Brother's mind gave up and Brother's body took over. It brought his hand back and raised it, oblivious to the sudden rush forward of the guards. He saw Vorbis turn his cheek and smile. Brother stopped and lowered his hands. He said,
"No, I won't."
Then, for the first and only time, he saw Vorbis really enraged. There had been times before when the deacon had been angry, but it had been something driven by the brain, switched on and off as the need arose. This was something else, something out of control, and it flashed across his face only for a moment. As the hands of the guards closed on him, Vorbis stepped forward and patted him on the shoulder. He looked Brother in the eye for a moment and then said softly,
"Thrash him within an inch of his life and burn him the rest of the way."
An Iam began to speak, but stopped when he saw Vorbis's expression.
"Do it now."
A world of silence. No sound up here except the rush of wind through the feathers. Up here the world is round, bordered by a band of sea. The viewpoint is from horizon to horizon. The sun is closer. And yet looking down, looking for shapes, down in the farmland on the edge of the wilderness, on a small hill, a tiny moving dome, ridiculously exposed. No sound but the rush of wind through the feathers as the eagle pulls in its wings and drops like an arrow, the world spinning around the little moving shape that is the focus of all the eagle's attention. Closer and talons down, grip and rise. Brother opened his eyes. His back was merely agonizing. He'd long ago got used to switching off pain. But he was spread-eagled on a surface, his arms and legs chained to something he couldn't see. Sky above, the towering frontage of the temple to one side. By turning his head a little, he could see the silent crowd and the brown metal of the iron turtle. He could smell smoke. Someone was just tightening the shackles on his hand. Brother looked over at the Inquisitor. Now, what was it he had to say? Oh, yes.
The turtle moves, he mumbled.
The man sighed.
Not this one, friend, he said.
The world spun under Om as the eagle sought for shell-cracking height, and his mind was besieged by the tortoise's existential dread of being off the ground. And Brother's thoughts bright and clear this close to death.
I'm on my back, and I'm getting hotter, and I'm going to die.
Careful, careful. Concentrate, concentrate. It'll let go any second.
Om stuck out his long, scrawny neck, stared at the body just above him, picked what he hoped was about the right spot, plunged his beak through the brown feathers between the talons, and gripped. The eagle blinked. No tortoise had ever done that to an eagle anywhere else in history. Om's thoughts arrived in the little silvery world of its mind. We don't want to hurt one another now, do we? The eagle blinked again. Eagles have never evolved much imagination or forethought, beyond that necessary to know that a turtle smashes when you drop it on the rocks. But it was forming a mental picture of what happened when you let go of a heavy tortoise that was still intimately gripping an essential bit of you. Its eyes watered. Another thought crept into its mind.
Now, you play ball with me, I'll play ball with you. Understand? This is important. This is what I want you to do.
The eagle soared on a thermal off the hot rocks and sped towards the distant gleam of the citadel. No tortoise had ever done this before. No tortoise in the whole universe. But no tortoise had ever been a god, and knew the unwritten motto of the Quisition, Cuius testiculus habes, habeas cardia et cerebellum. When you have their full attention in your grip, their hearts and minds will follow. Ern pushed his way through the crowds, with Fergman trailing behind. That was the best and the worst of civil war, at least at the start. Everyone wore the same uniform. It was much easier when you picked enemies who were a different colour, or at least spoke with a funny accent. You could call them gooks or something. It made things easier.
Hey, Ern thought, this is nearly philosophy. Pity, I probably won't live to tell anyone.
The big doors were ajar, the crowd was silent and very attentive. He craned forward to see and then looked up at the soldier beside him. It was Simony.
I thought...
It didn't work, said Simony bitterly.
Did you?
We did everything. Something broke.
It must be the steel they make here, said Ern. The link pins on...
That doesn't matter now, said Simony.
The flat tones of his voice made Ern follow the eyes of the crowd. There was another iron turtle there, a proper model of a turtle, mounted on a sort of open gridwork of metal bars in which a couple of inquisitors were even now lighting a fire, and chained to the back of the turtle.
Who's that?
Brother.
What?
I don't know what happened. He hit Vorbis, or didn't hit him, or something. It enraged him anyway. Vorbis stopped the ceremony right there and then.
Ern glanced at the deacon. Not Cenobiarch yet, so uncrowned. Among the EMs and bishops, standing uncertainly in the open doorway, his bald head gleamed in the morning light.
Come on, then, said Ern.
Come on what?
We can rush the steps and save him.
There's more of them than there are of us, said Simony.
Well, haven't there always been?
There's not magically more of them than there are of us just because they've got brother, are there?
Simony grabbed his arm.
Think logically, will you? He said. You're a philosopher, aren't you? Look at the crowd.
Erne looked at the crowd.
Well?
They don't like it, Simony turned.
Look, brother's going to die anyway, but this way it'll mean something. People don't understand, really understand, about the shape of the universe and all that stuff. But they'll remember what Vorbis did to a man, right? We can make brother's death a symbol for people, don't you see?
Erne stared at the distant figure of brother. It was naked except for a loincloth.
A symbol?
He said. His throat was dry.
It has to be.
He remembered Didactylos saying the world was a funny place, and he thought distantly it really was. Here, people were about to roast someone to death, but they'd left his loincloth on out of respectability. You had to laugh, otherwise you'd go mad.
You know, he said, turning to Simony, now I know Vorbis is evil. He burned my city. Well, the Tsortians do it sometimes, and we burn theirs. It's just war. It's all part of history. And he lies and cheats and claws power for himself, and lots of people do that too. But you know what's special? Do you know what it is?
Of course, said Simony. It's what he's doing to...
It's what he's done to you.
What?
He turns other people into copies of himself.
Simony's grip was like a vice.
You're saying I'm like him? Once you said you'd cut him down, said Erne. Now you're thinking like him.
So we rush them, then, said Simony. I'm sure of maybe 400 on our side, so I give the signal and a few hundred of us attack thousands of them. And he dies anyway, and we die too. What difference does that make?
Erne's face was grey with horror now. You mean you don't know? He said.
Some of the crowd looked round curiously at him.
You don't know? He said.